Live from Atlanta, site of Super Bowl 53, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
That's true. Normally, we are in the Quicken Loan Studios in Southern California, but this is the mother of all road trips. We're taking this bad boy on the road. We are live in the ATL. We are on Radio Row. We are getting ready for Super Bowl 53. My name is Jim Rome. All right, so the show is a little bit different this week. We go guest heavy. Normally, on Monday, it's not that busy, but this is one of the all-time best Mondays we've had. You just heard from Josh Pastner and Cliff Averill in hour number one. Coming up next segment, my CBS colleague Pete Prisco. I've got Jim Trotter after that. Bill Romanowski coming up in hour number three, but as promised, we've got some more Georgia Tech in the house for you. We just talked Georgia Tech basketball. Now we talk Georgia Tech football. We are joined by the head coach there. He was named head coach on December 7th, 15-10 in a pair of bowl appearances in two seasons as Temple head coach. 15 wins is the most ever by a Temple head coach in his first 2 years. He had a couple of stints as an assistant at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech coming off a 7-6 season. They open up against Clemson on August 29th, Jeff Collins is my guest. Jeff, I was saying, you and I were laughing during the break, you have to follow Pastner, but Pastner had to follow Calipari at Memphis.
Right.
Yeah, this is not easy.
Yeah, this is an honor to be on this show with you. I'm a huge fan, and this is kind of a surreal experience. I still remember when the Bills and the Cowboys played in the Super Bowl in Atlanta.
My man.
I was in college and came and experienced it. So to be on your show, it's a huge honor.
I absolutely love that you mentioned that. Do you remember that? Because I don't want to date myself, but I've been talking about it in the week leading up to it. I was here that week.
Right.
I covered the game that week, man. It was cold. I mean, that ice storm was unlike any ice storm. What do you remember about that week?
Yeah, just being here and going through the NFL experience and, you know, being around the game. You know, I'm a huge college football fan, NFL fan, and to now be here. This is a surreal experience.
Hey, you want surreal. Jeff, what about the fact that you played in Bobby Dodd Stadium as a member of the Western Carolina Catamounts back in 89?
Yep.
Now, if I told you that day, after that game, that you would be here as head coach of Georgia Tech 30 years later, what would you have said?
Yeah, absolutely not. You know, when I was a graduate assistant at Georgia Tech in the late 90s, early 2000s with George O'Leary, I kind of crystallized that I wanted to do this one day and be the head coach here, but still, you know, going around Atlanta, seeing my face up on the billboards around 285, it's still very surreal that this is happening, but I'm having an absolute blast doing it.
Jeff Collins is the head football coach at Georgia Tech. Now, you mentioned O'Leary. When you were a graduate assistant of his, and he was the head coach, you kept trying to convince him to let you recruit. Tell me about the conversations. What were they like, and what gave you confidence that you could go into somebody's living room and come back with a recruit?
Yeah, so I was a Division III coach. Albright College, we signed 82 kids. I signed 45 of them before I got my job at Georgia Tech. First year, I asked Coach O'Leary, as a graduate assistant, if I could recruit, and he just shushed me away and pushed me back in a corner to break down some more film. The next year, I asked him again, and he was like, all right, wise guy, you know, we have 6 primary states that we recruit. You can have the other 44. And, you know, he thought that would shut me up. But we signed 5 kids out of those 44 states, and the very next year he promoted me to full-time as the tight ends coach.
Yeah, it's probably similar to what I went through. When I worked at ESPN back in the day, I wanted to get one of those so-called Sunday night conversations, and they gave me the same thing, like, really, you want that? You want that? All right, here's 5 guys. If you can get any one of them, you can have that, but there were 5 guys that they could never get. So we went out there, and we turned a few of them. How did you approach those 6 states when you got that opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. I just was relentless. GAs back then couldn't make phone calls, so I was just an incessant letter writer, and I'd probably send about 5 letters a day through the snail mail, and got them to, you know, have interest in Georgia Tech, and we ended up getting them, signed them, and they had great careers for us.
We're talking Georgia Tech football. Now, as you talked about, when you were here, Georgia Tech was a top 10 team.
Yep.
They were playing for ACC championships. As you look at the work in front of you, what's it going to take to get back to that spot? Is it a total rebuild, or can you turn this thing around quicker than that?
Yeah, just a big thing with me is just culture and branding. You know, I've been here when Georgia Tech was in the forefront of the conversation in college football. College game day was here. The primetime games are in Bobby Dodd Stadium. So I've seen it happen at this place, and I know we're going to get it back there. But it's all about culture. It's all about recruiting, and we're doing a great job. Hired an unbelievable staff of great men, relentless recruiters. They're going to help bring the talent back to the ATL.
The next head coach in any sport whatsoever that does not reference culture on this show will be the first.
Right.
I mean, culture is the buzz term, and understandably so. What does that mean to you? What does a Georgia Tech culture look like under Jeff Collins?
Yeah, innovative, playing with relentless effort, positive attitude, positive energy in every single thing that you do. We're going to attack everything that we have involved in the organization, and that starts with recruiting. That starts with our workouts. We were 5:30 Saturday morning doing a Game of Thrones workout in and around.
What is that?
It's just mayhem. There were 10 stations all over the campus, and for about an hour and a half, we got after it. Every single member of our staff, other than our full-time coaches, were dressed in as Game of Thrones characters, and just having fun, having excitement, working really, really hard, but you can have fun while you work hard, and we're doing that.
I'm glad you brought that up, because you made a point that having fun doesn't mean you don't care. Having fun doesn't mean you don't grind. Yep. And a lot of coaches seem to run from fun like it's the plague or something, and they treat college football like a job, you know, like a job or a career. And even worse than that, how do you go about balancing it out? Fun, but getting the work done.
Yeah, the big thing, I think you can have a lot of fun. There's a borderline between having fun, having energy, and having juice, and being silly. So we make sure we have that line set. We're going to do everything the right way, but we're going to have energy, we're going to have music, we're going to have, you know, just a lot of excitement surrounding our program, and I think the guys feed off of it. I mean, this is the music capital of the Southeast, actually the movie capital of the Southeast, so, you know, we're just going to have a lot of fun embracing that culture.
You mentioned juice. What does juice look like? What's it feel like? How does it show up?
You can just tell. It's people that have positive energy, excitement. When they walk into the facility, they walk into the building, you know, they want to be there. They want to excel. They want to work hard, but they want to positively affect their teammates. And the coaches that I've hired, I've been blessed to hire, have all of those traits, and I bring it out in their players. And, you know, so just getting to work together, we're doing that.
Georgia Tech head football coach Jeff Collins joins me on the row. Now, you talk about a guy who looks like he's not having a whole hell of a lot of fun. I could be wrong. Nick Saban does not look like he's having fun. You work for Nick. Is he having more fun than he lets on? And what was your biggest takeaway from being with him?
Yeah, I was blessed to be with him. 2007, we put together arguably one of the best recruiting classes in the history of the game, and learned so much structurally, organizationally, and how to deal with different parts of the organization. And, you know, I loved working for him. He coaches the defensive backs. I coach the defensive backs at Georgia Tech, and I did at Temple, and I take a lot of pride in that. I think the world of him.
Is he tough on the staff? Was he tough on you?
He is. It just, you know, holds everybody accountable. Everybody has an assignment. Everybody has a responsibility, and he does a remarkable job of just making sure, you know, that people are doing their job and following through in the mission of the organization.
Yeah, one more thought about him. He talks about the process. Well, he doesn't. Everybody talks about his process. Is his process so different from yours? Is it so different from other people's? I mean, is the process not attention to detail,
right?
Work really hard every single day. I mean, isn't that the process?
Yeah, so the beautiful thing, I've learned so much. I've been in with Dan Mullen at the University of Florida, at Mississippi State, and he had been with Urban Meyer. So that tree, I've been blessed to be in the Urban Meyer tree. I've been blessed to be in the Nick Saban tree and kind of blended those things. But the big thing is kids these days know if you're genuine or they know if you're fake. And so the big thing I do is try to be true to my personality, but still use the great things that I've learned from the great coaches that I've been able to work for.
What was the experience in Stark Vegas like? It's an amazing place, right?
It is. The cowbells, I think I still have echoes from the cowbells from being 4 years there. My last year there, we were number one in the country for 10 weeks. Dak Prescott was our quarterback. Bernard McKinney was the middle linebacker. We had a really good team and a really good culture. And the whole offseason conditioning program at Georgia Tech, and it was at Temple as well, is based on that offseason conditioning setup that we did.
How different a guy is Dak? What was he like to coach?
Yeah, so we have a saying in our organization, you can either be a great leader or you can be a great teammate. Those are the only two things you can be. But you can never be a great leader unless you're first a great teammate. Dak Prescott was one of the greatest teammates I've ever been around. First in the building, last one to leave. Always ate last, make sure his guys were taken care of. And it was an honor to be around him. We divide up the teams in the offseason in 10 different teams throughout the organization. The captains pick who's on their team. And one of my claims to fame is the last year there, I was Dak's first pick to be in the offseason teams, and we won the offseason.
That's great.
And so that was a little claim to fame for me.
That's a good one. Jeff Collins joining us. You know, you mentioned leadership. I'm fascinated by leadership. I'm sure you think about leadership quite a bit, have read up quite a bit on leadership. In terms of great leaders, are they made or are they born?
A little bit of both. I think you can, you know, work on your strengths, work on your weaknesses. You know, we try to educate our guys every single day on what they need to either be a great leader, to be a great teammate. I do think there's an inherent quality to being an exceptional leader, but there are always things that you can improve on. I try to improve on them every single day, and we try to educate our leaders in that way as well.
Do you need to make a lot of great plays in order to be a great leader?
No, I don't think the playing has anything to do with it. I think that gives you a little more street cred at times. But some of the greatest leaders that I've been around are the role players. They're the guys that are, you know, in the trenches doing the dirty work. And I don't get a lot of recognition, but they're the ones that really set the tone for your program.
Can you be a great leader if you do not go to the Waffle House? My man, you are a legendary Waffle House practitioner.
There's no doubt.
When did that start?
So I've always been a Waffle House guy ever since I was a little kid growing up in East Atlanta. And then being up in Philadelphia for the last 2 years, you had to drive an hour and 15 minutes to Delaware to go to a Waffle House, which I used to do.
Did you?
There's even a YouTube video of us going and getting a cheesesteak omelet at the Waffle House in Wilmington, Delaware. But then I just came back to Atlanta, and I'd missed it so much. I think the first 9 days as the head coach at Georgia Tech, I was eating breakfast in the Waffle House. So
you have some catching up to do. Listen, I'm a West Coast guy, so I don't know a lot about it. And I think a lot of people listening or watching may not know about it. For those who have not had the pleasure of dining at a Waffle House, how would you describe the experience?
It's beautiful. You know, Anthony Bourdain and, you know, one of his shows, one of the greatest 3-minute segments in any of his shows was his experience at a Waffle House. So people go YouTube it. And, you know, it's just a great place. Just you feel at home. And the food is unbelievable.
So most importantly, is ending your day the perfect way to end your day at a Waffle House, or is it starting your day at the Waffle House?
100% starting your day. You know, I'm an early riser. I'm up 4:30, 4:45, and invariably I end up at one of those great establishments. You know, the yellow and the black and the Georgia Tech colors, you know, kind of speak to you a little bit.
All right, so you open up against Clemson. Before you go, let me ask you about that. It's not that you need your guys to be motivated, but knowing that that's how you open up the season, does that give everybody a little more juice every single day in the offseason?
I think so, and I think that's with any program. If you've got an elite competitor that you're going against to open the season, you know, I think it heightens your focus. And, you know, coming off their great win and their great season, and they've got mostly everybody back. So it's a huge challenge for us. It's one that we're excited about. But the biggest thing for us is we have to take care of ourselves. We have to get better every single day throughout our program, you know, installing new offenses, new defenses, getting away, you know, from the triple option that's been in existence there for the last 11 years. We actually have tight ends on campus. There hasn't been a tight end recruited at Georgia Tech in 11 years. So just all of those things are going to be unique and going to be new. So we're just trying to embrace that every day and build our culture.
Can't wait to see how that looks. Jeff Collins is the head coach at Georgia Tech. He's been in that capacity now for less than 2 months. Had a couple of really good years at Temple and now a new beginning. Jeff, so good to see you. I really appreciate it. I can imagine what it must be like to be back home and to be the head coach. And 20 years ago, man, you were showing up here as a fan.
Right.
And now you dominate the row.
Yes, sir.
Really good to see you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks so much. Really well done. Good to talk some Georgia Tech sports, Georgia Tech basketball, Georgia Tech football as well. And they do open up against Clemson on August 29th. We are live in Atlanta, site of Super Bowl number 53. We are all over it all week long. When we come back, my CBS colleague Pete Prisco joins me on location at Radio Row. Do not go anywhere. Welcome back. We are live in the ATL. We're on Radio Row. And as Mondays go, it may sound like I'm just saying it, but as Mondays go, this is as good as it gets. I've never seen this kind of energy, never seen so many good guests. Monday, as Mondays go, this one is really, really good, and it's about to get better. I'm joined right now by a friend of the program, a CBS colleague. He is a senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com. He is an analyst on the Pick 6 podcast. You know I'm talking about Pete Prisco. Pete, good to see you. How are you?
What's up, Romy? How are you?
Good, man. How about you? How's your week going?
I'm good. You know, we're right over there in our studio, in our CBS Sports HQ studio over there all week.
How do you like that? How's that
going?
I love it. It looks great, by the way.
It's fun. They've done a great job. It's 24 hours on Hulu, Apple, the whole deal. You can find my ugly mug on there.
Don't let anybody on that network. So lay it out. What do you do for them? And if people looking for you want to see you, when and how do they find you?
It's, you know, like a 24-hour sports network that's on Hulu and Apple. It's all the cord cutters. They, you know, those people, they... I'm an old man, so I'm not a cord cutter, so I don't know what that
PT,
is.
I was going to say, do you even know what that means?
You should hear my dad trying to find it. That's even funnier. No, it's great because we do a lot of, you know, with Brady Quinn and Brian McFadden, we do a lot of, you know, their shows and preview shows, and we do a preview show with Brady Quinn and myself every week. We break down the games, and we don't hold back, by the way.
No, you guys don't. You don't. I watch it. I think it looks great. There's some really good information that comes out of that every single time. Now, you do a lot of – part of the reason for that, Pete, you do a lot of work on games, after games. You watch a lot of film. You analyze everything. You tend to know what works and what doesn't work. How much film of the Pro Bowl did you break down?
None. And you know what? I was actually flying up, and it was on. I was on JetBlue, and I'm sitting there, do I really want to watch this? It was awful. That game has to go away. Now they're putting guys in other positions. You know, when they start goofing around and somebody gets hurt, then you're going to have a problem.
That's the thing, right? I mean, to me, that's the biggest issue with it, because guys, look, guys are there to have fun. Guys are there not to get hurt, and as long as nobody gets hurt, they'll keep doing it. They'll keep doing it because people watch it. For some reason, people do watch it. My point is, you can't kill that thing. You can't fix it, but you cannot kill it.
You're right. You can't kill it. But can you do something like make it a flag football game or something? People would still probably watch it, right? But somebody could get hurt in a flag football game, too. Remember Robert Edwards back in the day got hurt
on the beach.
In the sand.
Yep.
In the sand, yeah. So you got to be careful no matter what you do.
Juju Smith-Schuster got dinged. And you imagine the horror the Steelers must feel watching that and seeing the potential number one. In fact, let me skip to the bottom, right? What about that? Antonio Brown, are these differences irreconcilable? Is there any way you see him returning to Pittsburgh?
No, I don't. I don't. Now, you know, you never say never, but it's bad. I mean, it's a bad situation. And you talk to people around the league and they say it's even worse than what it was. So I don't know how you fix that. And it's not just him either. Ben Roethlisberger's at fault, too. And so is Mike Tomlin for allowing it to happen. But I don't know how you fix it. But who trades for him, though?
I was going to say, realistically, what's the market for him? And what can they realistically expect to get in exchange?
They're not getting a one for him. They can talk all they want. Now, people say the Raiders have those extra draft picks they could give. I don't see that happening. I don't think the Raiders are going to do that. He's 31. He'll be 31. I mean, that you're starting to talk about a 31-year-old receiver who makes a lot of money. Yes, he's still a darn good player, but is he worth the headache? Everybody, you have to balance the headache against how good a player he is.
Can I tell you something? When you have the year that he had, 15 touchdowns, over 1,000 yards receiving once again, about 1,200 yards, if you're not worth it, man, you're a big headache at this point. Those are big numbers.
And
he might not be.
I think, too, Romy, I think he's bothered a little by Smith-Schuster starting to take away some of his targets.
You know it.
And he might end up being the number one guy. And you know the passing of the torch. Guys hate that.
No. Pete Briscoe joining us. That would not go well. I can't see him saying, you know what, I'm going to step aside because it's your time, young gun. That's not the way he's wired. That's not the way most of those guys are wired. All right, so before the conference games, Pete, you called your shot. You predicted the Patriots and the Rams. Let me start with the Rams. What did you see in them that made you feel like they could go on the road and beat New Orleans in New Orleans?
You know, the reason I picked them in that game, it didn't happen. I thought they would run the ball. Mm. I thought that the offensive line would push the Saints around a little bit. Even though the Saints were pretty good against the run all year, I thought they would run the ball. But then we saw Gurley standing on the sidelines, and it's one of the great mysteries of the NFL season so far.
Yeah, what happened? What do you think happened? Because we know he was hurt late, but he came back, he played well against the Cowboys, and then he was nowhere to be found in that game. What happened to him?
You know, I was in Mobile last week for the Senior Bowl, and there were some scouts and personnel people were wandering around. Did he check out of the game? Was it too big of a moment for him?
Wow.
And that's, I mean, for me,
was that
would
really
be
the talk? Were people saying that?
Yeah, that would be crazy, wouldn't it? That would be absolutely crazy if that were the case.
Do you think there's anything to that?
No, but there's something to it. Something's up. It wasn't an injury. And they've come out and said it. And privately, they've said there wasn't an injury. So why was he standing on the sidelines? Why was he seemingly okay standing on the sidelines? That's the problem for me.
Yeah, I want to say because he's hurt, because he's not right, and they knew he wasn't right, and he knew he wasn't right, and they got him out of the game. But you think that he might be right. He might be fine physically.
If he's fine physically, it's a problem.
I was going to say it's a real problem if he's fine physically.
Right.
I'm assuming that there's no way that guy would mentally check out and that the moment would be too big for him. Now, maybe I'm wrong. He does not strike me as being that guy. But if that's the issue, can they win without a guy who's fully engaged and right?
Absolutely not. As good as C.J. Anderson's been, they have to get Todd Gurley in this game to have a chance to win. Here's the other thing, Romy. If I would say he was hurt and we'd say, okay, he's fine. But he came back against the Cowboys and ran for over 100 yards. And then he practiced all week and they said he was fine all week. So where's the injury? Did it happen on a Saturday before the game? I mean, what happened? Did something happen?
No, I made that same point. He did look really good against the Cowboys. But if that moment wasn't too big for him, why was the next moment too big for
him? Don't know. And I don't think that's not my theory.
Reportedly.
I don't think.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. That's not my theory. I'm just something I'm repeating, but I don't know. There's got to be something else at play here.
Pete Briscoe joining us. You know, with all the focus on the blown call in the championship game, are people forgetting that the Rams did come from way back? They were down 13-0 in that first half. Are they getting credit for being as gritty and as tough as they are?
You know, it's funny because Gurley might have wilted in the moment, but Jared Goff did not. And there were people around the league who thought he would be the one that would be the one that would have the trouble in crunch time. And he played great football the fourth quarter. And in overtime, you got to give him credit. So you got to give the Rams credit. You know, it's funny. Zuerlein nailed a 57-yard field goal, could have been good from 70, and nobody talked about it in a pressure situation because of the blown call. Forget it. The blown call is gone. There's nothing you can do about it. It was a terrible call. It was one of many. Hey, they blew a face mask on Jared Goff late in the game. It would have been a first and goal. They would have scored a touchdown anyways.
I'm going to argue Jared Goff played better than Drew Brees in that game. He played great. How do you think, though, he shows up on the biggest stage on Sunday?
I think he'll be fine. You've talked to him before. He's got a little bit of a swagger about him. I mean, he believes in himself. He kind of shrugged off all the critics anyways. He bounced back and had the great season last year, then came back, had another good season. I think he'll be fine. But everything they do, they have to run the football. Everything they do is predicated on that outside zone. And you know who runs the outside zone? That's Todd Gurley.
All right, so they got to run the ball. Can they stop the run?
That's going to be a problem. And everybody, you know, we talk about Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald's a great player. Defensive player of the year. He got my vote. He'll be named that on Saturday. But one thing you can do at Aaron Donald is run at him. He's not a big physical guy. I imagine the Patriots are going to line up just like they did against the Chiefs and pound it against the middle of that defense.
Pete Briscoe joining me here on the set for Radio Row. You know, for years, you always hear defensive players say, if you're going to have any chance against Tom Brady, you got to pressure him right up the middle. You got to get up the middle. They've got Aaron Donald. They've got Ndamukong Suh, who suddenly looks more engaged than he did the entire season. Do you think they can get the pressure on Brady that they need to disrupt him and his rhythm?
If they stop the run. If they don't stop the run, they have no chance. And the problem is with the Rams, they're little. You know, Donald's not a big guy. The linebackers are very little. Mark Barron's a converted safety. And so I think knowing Bill the way I've covered him and watched him over the years, I think he's going to line up and power football against them.
All right, so if you're Wade Phillips, what is your top priority on Sunday?
Stop the run.
Yep.
If you stop the run, then those guys can get after Brady right up the middle, and that's when you give him problems. We've seen Brady over the years. What has this kryptonite been? Four-man rushes that get him off the spot. We've seen it in Super Bowls. We've seen it in big games. We saw it in the championship game against the Broncos that one year. I think they have to pressure him up the middle.
Now, Pete, speaking of Belichick, when you look at him, how many people, literally, who've ever coached in this league would be able to get what he's gotten from this particular group of players?
This is one of his best coaching jobs, if not the best. And people will say, well, the first one, that team wasn't that good. Remember, in the middle of the season or early in the season, people were burying this team. They were burying Brady. They were saying they're done. The dynasty's over with. You can't ever bury him because the defense always gets better at the end of the year. He takes young, undrafted guys like Jackson and puts them in the lineup, and they start making plays, and he takes cast-offs like Simon, and he plays. That's what he does. He's a great this is just proof of how great a coach he is. And the question is this now. Is this the best coach-player combination in the history of sports?
Huh. Where do you come out? Answer your own question.
I'd say they're in the argument as number one. I mean, people will say Jackson and Jordan, you know, Russell and Arbach, and, you know, but they're in the conversation.
And yet it almost ripped apart. Allegedly.
Right.
Reportedly, right?
Right.
Huh. All right, so what about, okay, you're talking about guys, that he can take guys who are just guys and turn them into stars and make them really effective. Julian Edelman is an example. Not a guy, but a star. Not just a star, but all of a sudden you're hearing that he might be Hall of Fame material. Do you buy that? Is he
not
that good?
Not a chance in hell. No way. Come on, Julian Edelman's been a really good player, but he's not a Hall of Famer. And that's part of the greatness. You know, I was talking today with, I think, Sal Palantonio. We were talking about, where are the Hall of Famers from this dynasty?
Right.
There are none. There's nobody. Brady's a slam dunk. Belichick's a slam dunk. You know, Ty Law's in the conversation this year. Mike it in. Richard Seymour's in the conversation.
William McGinnis?
In the conversation, but no slam dunk. Rob Gronkowski's a slam dunk, but that's it. And Moss is, and he had him for a couple years, but not really a great part of it.
Do you think Gronk, is this going to be his last game, do you think?
I think so. Uh-huh. I do. I think that body is beat down. I think he's taken way. I mean, by the end of the year, he looked like he was carrying a piano around on his back. He was slow and, you know, he was laboring. He just didn't look like the same guy. Now, he's picked it up a little bit in the playoffs, but I think he's done.
All right, so, Pete, who do you like on Sunday and why?
I'm never going against Belichick and Brady. I'm just not. I'm not. I think that he will figure out some way to slow down the Rams' run game, and on the other side, I think they'll figure out a way to move the football. They're just too good, both of them.
He is a senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com, also an analyst on the Pick 6 podcast. Pete Briscoe joins me on the road. Pete, great to have you back. Always good to see you. Thank you.
All right, Jim. Take care.
Great job. Well done. Pete Briscoe, my guest. All right, we're going to keep going on the row. Listen, if you want to jump in, you can. Hit me up on the phones, 1-800-636-8686. Also, follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. You can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at HaveAtake.com. I'll try and get some of this reaction in. We are here all week long, as you can tell now. If you didn't know before, now you do. It's a very different show the week of Super Bowl. And we'll have a lot more of this. In fact, tomorrow may not be as busy as today is. So if you want to take your shot tomorrow, you can. If you want to get through right now, you can do that too. Still ahead, Jim Trotter. Bill Romanowski makes his triumphant return to the row in hour number three. Right now, time for a sports update. Here's the very latest for you on a busy Monday.
Live from Atlanta, site of Super Bowl 53, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You know, honestly, I hate to pat us on the back, but I really feel like I have not been giving myself enough credit lately. I have not been giving me enough credit lately. So what I'm talking about right now, premium content, really, really good content, a lot of really good guests with different points of view, and we continue from Radio Row. We are joined right now by a very good friend of the program. He is a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter, which we'll get into in a moment. He's the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon, and as I mentioned, a very good friend of the program, Jim Trotter on the road. Jim, it is so good to see you. How are you?
Brother, I'm doing well, except you got me following Prisco, you know?
It's a tough act to follow.
You know?
I think you'll be all right. I think you'll be all right, but that is a tough act to follow.
Pete did tell me it is a tough act to follow.
Oh, he let you know, right? Well, yeah. He's like me. He has not been giving himself enough credit lately, and nor have I. All right, so I mentioned Hall of Fame voting. Jim, let me start right there. Mm-hmm. You've got the Hall of Fame voting coming up later on this week. Overall, what is Super Bowl week like for you?
You know, Jim, actually, it's not too bad for me because I've learned over a couple decades of covering these how to maneuver to make the week easier for me. First of all, number one, I'm not a big party guy. I'm not a big crowd guy, so I don't have to worry about burning the candle at both ends. So that's good. Number two,
let's not gloss over that, man. That is big.
No,
that's really big. I understand that.
Yeah, it's just not for me. So number two, it depends on who I'm working for. When I was a newspaper reporter, man, you were grinding every day. You were doing a main story. You were doing a notebook, other things. So it was like you were just worn out by the end. When I got to Sports Illustrated, it was more of we're looking for one story, maybe two. So it was easier. You could prepare coming in, do some of that legwork before you got here. Then at ESPN, they didn't have me doing anything except for Hall of Fame. So it was like, why am I even here? In fact, no, true story. So there's one year we finished with the Hall of Fame. They don't have me scheduled for anything on Sunday. It was the Super Bowl down in Houston. I called my boss. I said, can I go home? And he seemed kind of surprised, but I said, there's nothing for me to do. I'm not just going to chase quotes after the game.
So, in other words, they were paying you
to do nothing.
I was going to say nothing. Not to work that hard, but you're saying it, to do nothing.
To do nothing.
It's good work if you can get it. Jim, what's the problem?
I'm not wired that way, man.
Yeah, okay.
If I'm going to work, I want to earn my money. I want to earn my checks. So,
home. Newspaper. SI, ESPN, pick up the story right there.
So now it's NFL Network, and there's something every day. So there's a couple of stories I'm working on, one on Ndamukong Suh, one on Brian Flores, the Patriots defensive coordinator, soon to be Miami Dolphins head coach. Then you've got TV responsibilities during the week as well, some Radio Row. And then on Saturday, which is, you know, a big day for me, it's the Hall of Fame voting. And that starts at 7 in the morning and goes until we get done.
All right, so what's your approach with the Ndamukong Suh piece without giving up what the piece is? I mean, I can remember when this guy came out of college and talking to him, and he seemed like one of those guys, well, if something seems too good to be true, it generally is. But remember how we all saw him then, and now consider how most people see him right now. And how about the fact that he didn't seem like he had a really good year, but all of a sudden reemerges when they need him most, right? So how are you approaching that piece?
It's more of just trying to get a little bit away from football, trying to understand sort of the psychology of where he's at in his life and his career. You know, what this moment means to him after all of the success in college, after being rookie defensive player of the year, after signing the largest defensive contract in NFL history and never having that team success, now to be at this point where you're playing for a championship, You know, what does that moment really mean to you? And particularly when you've sacrificed this year in terms of he could have gotten more money from a couple of different clubs prior to this season. He could have gotten greater individual accolade playing for different clubs. But you come in here and you sacrifice playing to, you know, the best defensive player in football, if not the best player in football, in Aaron Donald. So what is that all about, and has it been worth it?
Jim Trotter joining us. Now, you mentioned Prisco. Prisco said before he left he thinks that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick is the single greatest coach-player relationship in any sport, in the history of any sports. Now, you've covered this sport and sports in general for a long time. Have you ever seen anything like Belichick and Tom Brady and what they're doing in coming back for their ninth Super Bowl? Is it that big?
Well, not as it relates to the NFL, without question. I think when you start saying any sport, that gets dangerous. You know, you think of Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan. I mean, they went to six finals, never went to a game seven, won all six, you know, those sorts of things. So I'm not one to say all sports, but NFL, without question. Think about this. Tom has been in a Super Bowl in 9 of his 17 full seasons as a starter.
It's stupid.
Are you kidding me?
Right.
Since Bill Belichick came in as a defensive coordinator with the Giants, I think he's played in, I want to say, 32% of all Super Bowls since then, something like that. I know I'm not far off on that number, trying to do it off the top of my head. You look at this game, what's so interesting? Tom Brady has more playoff wins, more playoff passing yards, more game-winning drives than Jared Goff has in his entire career, including the postseason, regular season and postseason. So what they've done together and what Tom has done, and you know this, Jim, I grew up in the Bay Area, I was born in San Francisco. Joe Montana's always been my guy. You could never talk to me about a quarterback being greater than Joe Montana. Tom Brady is it. He is the GOAT, you know. And
you still feel that way if he loses?
Absolutely.
This Sunday?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just to get to where he is at this point. And think about some of the losses in the Super Bowl. They took plays that none of us could have ever imagined, whether it's Tyree's catch or whether it's Eli dropping that pass into Manningham down the sideline. Phenomenal plays were required to beat him in a Super Bowl. So for me, without question, Tom Brady is the greatest.
Jim Trotter joining us. So Brady is the greatest and Belichick is the GOAT when it comes to coaching.
Absolutely.
If you had to pick one, who deserves more of the credit for this dynasty?
You know, it's kind of like asking me cake or ice cream, you know? I'm going to say both.
No, that's easy, man. Ice cream.
No, it's both for me, man. I got that bad sweet tooth. But, you know, look, you don't want to disrespect the player and say that it's the coach, because you only win championships if you have great players. And you don't want to say disrespect the coach by saying it's the players, because there have been a lot of great players who didn't win championships in part because they didn't have the right coach. So I just think it's a perfect marriage between the two. I can't sit up here and say it's one or the other. I just think about I do think about what Tom has been able to do with guys that are never going to be in the Hall of Fame with him. And I'm talking about from an offensive standpoint, not a defensive standpoint, but guys who are never going to be in the Hall of Fame with him, guys with names that most of us would never know if not for Tom Brady. He is just a guy, and it's the definition of greatness to me when you elevate the play of those around you. He does it without question. He's phenomenal. I wish he would get off of the whole, you know, somehow being disrespected or whatever, even now X number of years into the league, but that's who he is. That's part of his edge, you know?
That's his fuel. Nobody's buying that. I don't know who the, quote, people are who say they suck. Right. I don't know who these people are who he says don't believe in him. You know, but maybe in part, Jimmy, answer my next question. When you talked about Tom Brady elevating guys' play around them, I mean, based on everything you've seen, everything you've reported over the years, how do you explain what the Patriots have done and how they're able to do it? And how come nobody can copy them or emulate that or stop it?
Well, I think, number one, you're talking about an all-time great player and an all-time great coach. That's number one. Then you look at the staff. I think one of the things that Bill Belichick does so well is he coaches up his coaches. A lot of head coaches can't do that in terms of their assistants being able to coach what they want, how they want it, to their players and relay that information. Bill's very good at that. Why can't anyone emulate it? There aren't very many Tom Brady's or Bill Belichick's around. And then it's getting the right players. The one thing I've always respected about Bill never bought into the whole resumes in terms of all pros or Pro Bowls. He says, I need specific players to do specific things. I don't care about what your resume is. I just need you to do this one thing and do it well. And that's what he asks of you. He does not ask you to do well things that you don't do well. And to me, that's a sign of a great coach.
Jim Trotter joining us. Jim, back to something Prisco said. We were talking about Todd Gurley and the fact that he had that terrible game against the Saints, and they still found a way to get it done, which to me speaks to the Rams' toughness. They're more than just this high-octane, high-flying offense. That's a tough-minded team.
Sure.
Prisco said he talked to some folks, some scouts, who suggested anonymously that Gurley may have shut it down, that the moment may have been too big. I have no idea what it was. I'm assuming he's not right physically. How do you explain that guy having that game on that big of a stage? Do you have an opinion on it?
Well, I can't, other than say that I know this about Sean McVay. I'd heard going into that game, he was not the kind of coach who was going to be influenced by, again, a player's resume and past accomplishments. He knew that C.J. Anderson was running really well and had played well while Todd was injured and hurting. And the one thing Sean was going to do was to make sure that he had a role for C.J. in that game, regardless of how Todd felt about it or anyone else, and he did do that. Does that get in Todd's head? Possibly. I mean, if you're a great player, you want to be on the field in those moments. But to his credit, he said afterwards that he sucked, you know, that he did not play well, and he didn't. And I don't expect him to have two of those back-to-back.
All right, so back to the point about the Rams and their physical toughness. I mean, are they a run-first team? Or are they a pass-first team?
No, I think everything stems off their run game, their play-action pass game, without question. You know, you could talk to people during the year, even early in the year, where Goff was putting up numbers and whatnot in the passing game, and everyone who has been around that team or close to it will tell you that Gurley was the straw that stirred that drink. They go, for the most part, as their running game goes. And look, you know this, Jim. In this league, if you can make a team one-dimensional, it's that much easier to stop them. And I can guarantee you right now, that Bill Belichick and Brian Flores are saying, we have to shut down this run game. When I talked to the Saints prior to that game, NFC Championship game, to Dennis Allen, he said, the first thing we've got to do is slow Todd Gurley and C.J. Anderson. And that was their focal point.
We're talking to Jim Trotter for a few more moments. Jim, the Patriots got on this season's playoff run with that dominating win against the Chargers. I had Anthony Lynn on Friday, and he was very straightforward in saying, we picked a bad day to have our worst day. Where do the Chargers go from here?
Look, what they've got to do, number one, offensively, is get some folks who can win one-on-one battles, more guys who can win one-on-one battles. I think they understand that to beat teams like the Patriots, particularly when they go into man coverage, press coverage, you've got to win those battles, and they didn't. So I think with them now, look, there's no question the Chargers have talent. I mean, anyone who would say they don't, they're kidding themselves. But I do think in that game, they got out-coached, they got out-schemed, they got out-game-planned. They simply were not ready for what the Patriots brought to that game.
And did not adjust quickly enough either.
No, I'm not sure they adjusted,
at all.
Period.
Right. Well, maybe I was being generous in that regard. I mentioned you're a Hall of Fame voter. So what's the process like for you this week? How much homework have you done on the finalists before you actually get in the room to vote?
You do a lot, and it's more so to supplement what you already know. You've seen a lot of these guys play. You know who these owners are, the contributors are, the coaches are, that sort of thing. Now you want to talk to people and see if there's something you've missed, if there's a perspective you don't have. For me, this week is a little busy because, you know, I've been asked to present Pat Bowlen, and I've been asked to co-present, you know, Tom Flores. So I want to make sure that I do everything I can to give these men their due. I believe both of them are deserving of going into the Hall of Fame. And I want to make sure I don't leave anything unturned. And also what happens this week, Jim, is you start getting a lot more calls from players, from coaches, from others who want to get their guy in. And it's always fascinating to me to give them that list of 15 and say, okay, let me hear your five. And then to have Hall of Famers even compare it with another Hall of Famers five. And inevitably, very rarely do you get the same five.
Right. I got about a minute left. I've got to ask you this. Sure. Recently, I know you're a big fight fan. You retweeted a collection of Marvin Hagler's knockouts. Who are some of your favorite fighters of all time, Jim?
Oh, I mean, everything starts with Muhammad Ali, without question. I remember I'm old enough to say that I was sitting around the radio. I would search the radio dial.
Boxing on radio.
To find
so
Ali
good, man.
Fights. Yeah,
yep.
I mean, that's who I was. So it's all about Ali. And then you look at, I'm not old enough for the Sugar Ray, Richard.
Robinson.
Robinson. Thank you. I'm not old enough for him or the Marcianos or whatever. So for me in my area, it was the Sugar Ray Leonard, those sorts of guys.
Ray Leonard was amazing. Ray Leonard will always be one of my favorite fighters. Jim Trotter, wrapping up hour number two. Jim, so good to see you. Thanks for making time. And it's always good to have you here in the jungle.
Thanks for having me, bro.
My man, Jim Trotter. Nobody better. Nobody better. We go to hour number three. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. We are live on the road. We are in Atlanta. We will be here all week long. Do not go anywhere.